Thank you very much.
Thanks for both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We'll move to the fourth case today, ML versus United States. Mr. Marthuski.
Thank you. Good morning still. My name is Tom Marzuski. I represent the appellant LM. May it please the court. The issue before this court is whether the plaintiff's complaint pled that the Postal Service voluntarily undertook and the United States government voluntarily undertook to protect reasonably foreseeable victims, including the minor KM from a postal carrier, Tucker. In 1990, Tucker was removed from his postal carrier position because of allegations of sexual molestation on his postal carrier route.
That's what I wanted to focus on. It seems to me that you think that the motive for this transfer from an active postal route to a desk job is what the government's liability should turn on. And if their motive was because they had already concluded that he was a sexual molester and they had already concluded that people on the route needed protection from him, then this was tantamount to undertaking an affirmative duty to protect the public from him as long as he was employed by the Postal Service. And I guess I'm troubled by that because it seems to me it would really have the effect of discouraging this kind of investigation. At the time they removed him, perhaps they didn't know if he had in fact done something wrong. There were certainly allegations, but this wasn't the time at which he went to prison. It was after the incident with your client and his daughter. So I'm very troubled with the notion that any time an employer, a public employer like the Postal Service, decides to transfer somebody to a desk job to look into something, they've automatically undertaken a duty to protect. I think that's a big jump as a matter of law. It reminds me of imposing liability because of subsequent remedial measures, which we don't do as a matter of policy.
Well, we pled that they voluntarily undertook this duty, Your Honor.
I know, and you pled that, but it sounds like a legal proposition to me. We certainly understand that they transferred him. Nobody's disputing at this stage that fact. Maybe nobody will ever dispute that fact. But how can we go from that fact to the voluntary undertaking of an affirmative duty to protect people from something that, for all they knew at that time, maybe he'd never done?
We didn't get to have an opportunity to have one word of discovery in this case.
Well, I know, and I'm trying to figure out whether this is the kind of thing, whether the fact of the reassignment alone is enough to open the discovery door to you. That's, I guess, a way of putting it.
Well, I think we have pled in good faith under the existing law, a structure which should allow us to engage in some discovery. Otherwise, any case where something happens where we have alleged that the post office was put on notice by the Richland Park Police Department that he sexually molested children during his postal carrier route, wearing a postal uniform with a postal truck, and these things happen, and we allege these things, and then they say, well, forget about it. You don't have an opportunity to do discovery, so we win, because when you go before the appellate court, a judge will say, well, perhaps they didn't know, and all I can say is we didn't have a chance to do discovery.
I understand. We have to take all the facts at this stage in the light most favorable to you. And I guess this is coming up as not really a 12b-6, it's coming up as a 12b-1 because it deals with the scope of the government's waiver of sovereign immunity under the Federal Tort Claims Act and whether the supervision or intentional tort exceptions exclude you. I mean, it's a terrible underlying set of facts, of course, but it deals with whether there's federal liability for these things. And so, you know, it's taking the facts as you say they are, since they haven't been contested, what do we have? Negligent supervision, tolerance of intentional torts by postal carriers?
No, I think what we have is they undertook a duty to protect minor children from this postal carrier being on a postal route.
They
took him away from that position. They took him from having a postal uniform to not having one. They took him from having a postal truck to not having one. I mean, people in the neighborhood, they see their postal carrier every day. And this is somebody who's held in a position of trust and comfort in the community. He was able to use that position before 1990, and he was able to use that position again when they let him back out there.
We understand that.
And the government's really saying in their brief that we don't have a duty because if we did, the duty would have lasted too long. They say that we don't have a duty because KM, the minor child in this case, who was 7 years old at the time she was sexually molested by this postal carrier in his postal uniform with his postal truck, hadn't even been born yet.
Well, that's a ridiculous argument. I don't know why the government made it. But but the point here is really whether moving him to the desk job can be the kind of assumption of an affirmative duty to protect that would take you out of the Federal Tort Claims Act legal exclusions from the government's liability. I see it as a pure question of law.
Well, I see it as a pure question of, we have alleged a duty under Sheraton and under Doe. These cases
but
are...
But duties don't arise from facts. Duties exist as a matter of law, and then there are facts that either do or don't support.
Well, as a matter of law, when you voluntarily undertake to take somebody from a position where they were able to use these instrumentalities to sexually molest children on a postal neighborhood route and take them out of that, and when you say perhaps they didn't even know, well, I think we have pled the allegation.
Yeah, we'll assume they knew. I'm happy to do that.
Okay, well, that'd be
the
great.
The question is there the
government
does that amount to the affirmative duty you're talking about?
I think it clearly would under Sheraton. I mean, in Sheraton, all you have is somebody who was intoxicated and they saw he had a rifle. They didn't know who or
right.
if he was going to shoot somebody. In this case, we have somebody who was sexually molesting, just like the Catholic Archdiocese, are under fire because they knew that certain priests were alleged to have molested children. What did they do? They moved them to another they moved them to another parish. Now, of course, that practice will change, but will the government's practice change without there being a duty, without us being allowed to go on with our case and saying, you have done something, and then what you've done is you moved them to a different neighborhood, like
would
moving to a different parish.
Would there be a duty if they had investigated him during this two-year period and had concluded at the end of that investigation that the allegations were wrong, so then they let him back out in Park Forest? They made a mistake, in other words, I'm postulating.
Yeah, I don't know whether they...
So they're strictly liable, their investigation has to be right?
I don't know whether that happened, Your Honor, and if we...
So I'm asking, would the duty exist if all they did was investigate, and they came to a conclusion, but we'll assume an erroneous one?
That's a set of facts that I don't know whether that occurred, and I don't, frankly, know how to answer that hypothetical, but I think what would happen is the plaintiff should have an opportunity to find out what they did when they affirmatively undertook this duty to take this man off the street, off this postal route. Thank you.
Ms. North?
May it please the court, counsel. The United States cannot be liable for Mr. Tucker's assault of KM because it did not voluntarily undertake a duty to protect her.
but don't we have to take the facts in this complaint in the light most favorable to LM? And as such, the government moved this man, Tucker, off the streets because they knew he was a sexual abuser. And as long as he continued to be employed by the Postal Service, which could have been 15 more minutes or it could have been 10 more years, they undertook to keep him away from people that he could harm.
Reading the facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, which we have to do at this stage of the case, just removing him and reassigning him to a desk job, which is the voluntary undertaking that they've alleged in the complaint, is insufficient to create the liability that he wants us to leap to.
But what if they put him on the desk job because they knew that he was going to molest children if he was left alone with them? We have to assume then that when the government decided to let him back out in the street, they just figured, oh, well, we don't care. You know, he can molest as many children as he wants now.
No, I don't think so, Your Honor. We need to back up and consider what it means to be a good Samaritan under Illinois law, which is the duty that he's alleging the Postal Service assumed in this instance.
And he's relying on the Sheridan case, of course.
Yes, he is. And under Illinois law, a person, a good Samaritan, is somebody who voluntarily assumes a duty knowing that it will prevent harm to a third person.
Right. And the Postal Service assumes the duty to take Mr. Tucker off the street knowing that it will prevent him from abusing young children.
Then they are only liable under Illinois law if either the voluntary undertaking increases the risk of harm to the victim, which did not happen here. If anything, taking him off the street increases the chances that the victim will not be harmed, or they are doing it to finish a duty that they already had an obligation to perform. That's the Sheridan case. There were regulations in the naval base requiring the servicemen who undertook the duty to report him, and they did not. Or the person who the victim has to be relying on the undertaking. KM wasn't even born at the time that the undertaking happened.
I really took violent exception to that argument of yours. So what he should do to be with impunity is molest only one-year-olds, because there's every year one-year-olds become two-year-olds and new one-year-olds come along, and then he's free.
No, and I apologize if that's the way you took the argument. That is not what we're trying to argue. The point is that the undertaking, the mere reassignment of Mr. Tucker to a desk job,
that he has a duty to, that the Postal Service has a duty not to endanger the class of children. What's wrong with that?
Because they didn't voluntarily assume that duty just by the mere fact of reassigning him to a desk job.
Why not? Why was it precisely their interest, as he has alleged the facts to be, to keep him away from children, no matter which children? They didn't care if it was children in house number one or the children in house number two. It was children.
Unless they really only
wanted to protect the children in one house and not the children in the next
house. No, I see your point. It just doesn't matter, because under Good Samaritan law, it's not the fact that you're a Good Samaritan that makes you liable. In fact, it's the opposite. In Illinois, if you're a Good Samaritan, you're not liable unless something happens. If you increase the risk of harm to the child, which taking him off the street doesn't do. If anything, it decreases the risk of the harm to KM, to the children in Richton Park, the children in Park Forest, the children anywhere that he might encounter while he's wearing a Postal Service uniform. What the plaintiffs have done is they've stopped at the first step. They've said he undertook a Good Samaritan duty, therefore he's liable. Therefore we're liable when he continues to go out and molest little children. But that's a leap that you cannot make under Good Samaritan law in Illinois. The Sheridan court didn't even make that leap, because they were saying there, and they specifically said a couple of times in the opinion, that there was a pre-existing duty that was present by virtue of the naval regulations that were on that base and that applied to the servicemen who were the Good Samaritans.
So if he was a FedEx employee and was sued in state court, by analogy, FedEx would have the same defense as the Postal Service.
Well, actually, not. They would have the same Good Samaritan defense, but FedEx, my understanding is that they could be held liable under a respondeat superior theory of liability, which the Postal Service cannot.
They argue that he wasn't acting within the scope of his employment.
They probably would also make that argument. But it's from a Good Samaritan point of view, I think you're right, FedEx would also be in the same situation as the Postal Service. The point is that you've got to have both pieces. It's not enough to just remove him from his desk job and end the inquiry.
But the Postal Service, unlike the military, has no regulations telling Postal Service workers not to damage property, not to hurt people, not to run into them.
I'm not aware of any, Your Honor. I'm certainly not.
There must be pre-existing regulations, the Postal Service, requiring people to exercise due care in their job.
I do not know, Your Honor, but I can assume that there is not a regulation that says that it's specific.
What obligation does the Postal Service have when it becomes aware of circumstances?
I do not think there is a legal obligation that they have. I could see the Postal Service doing what it looks like it did in this case, which is to take him off the street and investigate the claims and frankly, to fire him if he's violating the law.
So suppose instead of the Postal Service, this had been a federal daycare facility, and word came to the operators of the facility that one of the workers was abusing the children. So they moved the worker and put that individual in a desk job for a couple of years, and then at some point maybe somebody loses the file or whatever, I don't even know what happens, but they then put the person back into the daycare facility and they begin happily abusing the children again. No liability.
I think in that case it's similar to the Doe case where there is a contractual obligation. There is not a pre-existing legal duty in this case. There is not. The only duty that they've alleged and the only thing they have not abandoned on appeal significantly is their claim that the only duty is a good Samaritan duty. And it just doesn't get them all the way there in this case.
Unless there are postal regulations that are the analogy to the contract that you're postulating in the Doe child care situation.
Well, I think that the regulations would have to be as specific as the regulations in the Sheridan case. In the Sheridan case, the regulations say if you see somebody with an unauthorized firearm, you must report them immediately. I think the analogy would be that there's a regulation that says, you know, do not molest children on your route. I mean, I hate to be that specific, but that's what the Supreme Court held in Sheridan, is that the specific regulation made a difference and was sufficient to impose a legal obligation that existed outside and in addition to the Good Samaritan relationship. It wasn't enough for Sheridan, for the court in Sheridan to just have the Good Samaritan relationship and move on. It was a specific regulation that went specifically to the act at issue. And we don't have that here.
Well, we don't know what the regulations are with regard to customer contact.
I do not, Your Honor. I do not. And I don't think that we need to do discovery to get there, because in this case, it's very clear that even if there was a regulation, there is not. The children are not made worse off by taking Mr. Tucker off the route and putting him on a desk job. If anything, they're in better shape.
Well, it isn't the allegation, though. That's not the problem. It's putting him back.
Well, no, but under Good Samaritan law, it's the undertaking that needs to cause an increased risk of harm. That's what the Redmond case and the other Illinois cases on this point say, is that you've got to make the victim worse off by the undertaking.
I'm sorry, is he locked into the Good Samaritan theory?
Well, he is now, because he's abandoned his negligent supervision and retention argument on appeal. He's also abandoned the special relationship argument. Frankly, neither one of them would work for him anyway. But right now, he devotes half of his brief to specifically saying the only thing the issue here is calling the removal and reassignment in 1990 a Good Samaritan undertaking, which jumps to triggering liability for the assault in 1998. I respectfully request that you affirm the decision of the district court. Thank you.
You have 2 minutes, sir.
As in the Sheridan court, this case doesn't involve increasing risk. The duty is voluntarily undertaken to decrease risk. I'm sure postal regulations involve not committing crimes. I don't think the fact of the specific regulation in terms of how specific it is goes to the voluntary undertaking. When we have a voluntary undertaking like was done here, it's done to decrease risk. Just like in Sheridan, if you have an intoxicated serviceman in a Bethesda Naval Base with a rifle, you want to take custody of that rifle and probably the person until he's no longer at risk. They didn't know who that serviceman, if or who he was going to shoot.
But so it is true that the reason the court did what it did was because the other servicemen who were aware of that problem had an independent duty. And that was what allowed the court to go forward.
And I think with discovery, we can develop one way or the other whether the Postal Service had this duty with the knowledge it may or may not have had. And that's why it's difficult to answer hypotheticals when you're denied an opportunity to do discovery after you've done a well-pled complaint. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.